What's up, everyone? Welcome back. Episode 53. 53 episodes of Between the Tackles. The gang is all back together after some sporadic absences. I'm Bird, your host, back in the saddle again, here with my good friend Hogan and our really good friend Manish. Hogan, how are you doing today? Welcome back. Let's do this.
Oh, I'm so much better than I was last week. I'm getting ready to stuff my face tomorrow for Turkey Day. Watch some football. Probably drink some alcohol I shouldn't drink, but you know what? It's the holidays. It's time to engorge myself and embrace the fatty attitude that I got over here. So let's do it to it. But other than that, I'm great. I'm excited to be back. Let's do this thing.
Love it. Love it. Manish, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great. A little sleep deprived for reasons that you guys are aware of, but I couldn't be happier. Let's put it that way.
Let's go. Before we start getting into this, I want to know, Hogan, what's your favorite dish on Thanksgiving? I got to know.
Like main dish, side dish?
Anything. Are we talking? What's your favorite Thanksgiving food?
You're asking a fat man what his favorite food is. That is like, you know, asking a fat kid what his favorite candy in a candy store is. There's too many options. You got to give me a specific. But if we're going specifics, I got to say, obviously, I love me some turkey. My wife loves a roast. She's not a turkey fan. So we usually get a roast. So we split it. So we do like a roast, a tenderloin with a turkey. And it's just like I said, fat man heaven for me. But then if you really, really want to get in on it, mashed potatoes is where I'm at. That is, I know everybody always goes mac and cheese, stuffing. I'm a mashed potatoes guy through and through. No skin in my potatoes, by the way. You got to clean that up. No skin in the potatoes.
Wait, wow.
I'm not a skin guy. It's just give me just straight up potatoes, man. Just give me the mash and I'm good.
How about you, Manish? What do you like?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're talking about a Hindu vegetarian Thanksgiving, so no turkey in the house.
No.
But now my wife usually makes lasagna. She's not going to do it this year for you know, reasons that you guys are aware of, but my parents will be coming over. To be honest with you, I got to run it by my dad, but I think we're just going to order pizza. And
we got
apple pie and maybe make a little garlic bread. But yeah, it's not your typical Thanksgiving when you have everyone except me who's a vegetarian.
That's awesome. That's a different perspective. I hadn't thought of that. Pizza on Thanksgiving,
right?
Pizza on Thanksgiving with football. That's a great combination.
There you go.
But the real question is, Burgess, what's yours? You can't leave us hanging where we give you our answers. You got to give us what's yours.
Well, I'm kind of in the same ballpark as you, Hogan. Like I love the turkey, but mashed potatoes with the skin. I don't need turkey. I don't need stuffing. I don't need any of that. Just give me a big bowl of mashed potatoes. I'll sit there and I'll just eat it. But my favorite dish by far. Nice homemade real potatoes.
You would like the skin in your potatoes, you sicko.
Well, anyways, we are at Thanksgiving, as we just brought up for you all, which means we got three games on Thanksgiving. We got football even on Black Friday this week, which is, you know, I don't want to say they're watering it down, but like, I'm always here for more football. I'm always here for more football, more days of the week, but we got a good episode here for you. We're going to recap some of the happenings that have gone on over the past couple of weeks while we've been kind of broken up here, kind of doing our own thing. And then we got some lovely picks for you. I had an atrocious week last week. So did Hogan. We really didn't do very well. Manish continuing to just school us and run away with the champion race. Hopefully we got something in store for us later this season in the last quarter poll of the 2024 season. So we'll see where that goes. I'm feeling pretty good about my picks this week, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But first order of business, some of the big news that came out this week. Daniel Jones was granted his release from the New York Giants. They just signed him to a monster contract. I believe it was before the 2023 season. And, you know, they chose Danny Dimes over Saquon Barkley there in New York. And that seems to have worked out just so magically for the New York Giants. I know Manish is pretty pumped about how that worked out. But Hogan, I'm going to go to you first. With Danny Dimes and the way that this was handled by the Giants, how do you think they made the right decision? Did they do him dirty? Where do you sit on it?
For me, I got to say that I, as much as I despise the Giants and their organization for, you know, the past, what they've done to our Patriots, I got to say that they handled the whole release and everything like that actually decently, you know, where he took the high road the way he did after the benching and, you know, talked to the organization, didn't bash anybody on his way out the door or anything like that. And the Giants did, you know, him a favor by doing what he asked of them. So it's not a great situation, like you alluded to, with everything with the contract that he had signed previously. Of course, I was coming off the playoff year where Daboll was first coached. He was coach of the year, I think, that year. They went 11-5. They made the playoffs, and it looked like they were trending in the great direction with him leading that pack there. And then the wheels just came flying off, obviously, the last couple of years where he's been injured and, you know, the talent has left around him and everything like that. But all things considered, it's unfortunate that his tenure comes to an end, especially where I don't think, you know, I don't root for Daniel Jones' success because he was a Giant as long as he was. But at the same time, I don't think he's a bad guy, and I don't think he could be a really bad player if he was surrounded with the right people. And I mean that by coaches and players and whatnot, because obviously he only had Saquon, if you think about it, really for the majority of his tenure with the Giants there. So the fact I saw a report this morning, and I didn't look into it more, but I think he just got picked up by Minnesota's practice squad, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. So that's going to be fascinating to watch and see if anything happens with Sam Darnold going forward, especially with the injury to J.J. McCarthy that happened earlier this year. But I'll throw it to Manish next and see, Manish, going forward with the whole Minnesota transaction now, do you see that making any splashes going forward if Sam Darnold either gets hurt or going forward into future seasons if they decide to stick with Daniel Jones up there?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when Jones was granted his release, there's a school of thought that he should try to latch on to a team that isn't particularly good, that needs a quarterback so he can play the final month and a half, kind of audition for free agency after the season. And there's an other school of thought, which I agreed with, which is to go to a playoff contending team as a backup, kind of absorb that culture, and then reset your value into the offseason. The reason why I think Minnesota makes a lot of sense for him at this stage is that if you end up going to a team like the Raiders, for example, who are obviously in need of a quarterback now, not a very good team. He'd have to learn an entirely new offense. He could only hurt his value in my estimation, because the idea that he could hit the ground running going to a team that needs a quarterback right now over the next, you know, 5 or 6 weeks is kind of pie in the sky. I think the reality is if he did latch on to a team like that, he would probably struggle, and that wouldn't do much for his value, as opposed to where he is now in Minnesota. He's with a guy who has a great track record of working with young quarterbacks, developing young quarterbacks in Kevin O'Connell. And the interesting element about the Vikings is that Sam Darnold will not be on the Vikings next year. He has played his way to a starter contract with somebody. So maybe Sam Darnold goes to Las Vegas or goes to another team that needs a quarterback, because he will be a starting quarterback in the NFL in 2025. It just won't be for the Vikings because, of course, the Vikings took J.J. McCarthy in the first round, and they plan on making McCarthy their quarterback of the future. So there's a natural vacuum there for a quarterback next year. And that's why I think it makes a lot of sense for Daniel Jones, because Darnold will be gone. He'll get paid and be a quarterback somewhere else. Who knows what J.J. McCarthy's rehab is going to be from his ACL that he suffered, several months ago. It might take him a little time to get up to speed. So maybe Daniel Jones is a bridge quarterback for part of the season. Either way, he's in an environment, a winning environment, with a great head coach in Kevin O'Connell, which we'll get to later on when we're talking about awards. But I just think it makes a lot of sense because he's the immediate backup. So if something happens to Darnold the rest of this season or in the playoffs, Jones can come in. But more importantly, he can learn the offense with no pressure, with a great young head coach, and potentially set himself up to be the backup quarterback at the very worst if he wants to resign in Minnesota next year, or potentially be an early bridge in the season for J.J. McCarthy. So to me, I think that Daniel Jones and his agent hit a home run. They hit the exact right spot for him to go at this stage in of his career.
You know, you bring up that point about where he lands. And, you know, for me, thinking like I was on the school of thought, he's going to try to go somewhere where he can play now. Like before Cooper Rush had a decent day the other day, I was like, Dallas makes a lot of sense for him to go there and have an awesome story of them playing the Giants, you know, this week on Thanksgiving, you know, come into play. But you bring up that valid point about, you know, Sam Darnold and how he's going to get paid, and the Vikings just drafted McCarthy. And, you know, Kevin O'Connell has gotten more out of Sam Darnold than I think a lot of people really expected. I mean, early in the season, you're like, he's an early, you know, candidate for the MVP, you know, the way he was playing. It's kind of come down a bit since then, but still at the same time, Kevin O'Connell has gotten the most out of Sam Darnold. I know you're a big Sam Darnold guy, Manish, but I don't think you expected him to play as well as he has this year in Minnesota. It was always an intriguing signing when he ended up there. And, you know, McCarthy gets hurt and, you know, he gets the starting job. It was, you know, a great fit. He was great in San Francisco in the time that you got to see him, you know, step in there for Brock Purdy. The fact that he could be their next bridge quarterback with, you know, whatever's going on with JJ McCarthy, I agree with you 100% that this was a slam dunk place for Danny Dimes to end up. Just to get a little off topic, you think Sam Darnold's going to end up in Vegas next year?
Oh, you just got to look at what teams need quarterbacks next year. You know, obviously Vegas comes to mind. It's going to be one of those types of teams that are probably going to draft a quarterback, but depending on who you talk to, this isn't necessarily the strongest quarterback class. You know, maybe there's one or two guys who are getting a lot of pump right now, with obviously Deion Sanders' son, Shador, being among them, but not really a strong class. So unless you're picking in the top two or three, you might, be wise to get a guy like Darnold. And even if you do draft one of these young guys, having a bridge quarterback isn't the worst thing in the world. You know, as many teams have shown, the Vikings obviously had to do out of necessity because J.J. McCarthy got hurt. But Darnold, to me, is a guy who's going to get paid. He's not going to get paid $40, $50 million a year. He'll probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million a year, which is obviously a lot of money. But when you look at the starting quarterback market, it's relatively cheap. So I think that's the type of contract Darnold's going to get. He's not going to get some kind of $100 million deal, probably closer to like a three-year deal, averaging roughly $30 million, somewhere in that neighborhood. He's clearly shown that he can do it. And there's a lot of football left. So his stock can only rise if the Vikings go deep into the playoffs. And who knows, if they end up going to the Super Bowl, God knows what kind of contract he's going to get. There's just not a place for him in Minnesota. I disagree with that. I would sign him. But when you invest a top 15 pick in a quarterback like the Vikings did in J.J. McCarthy, and he hasn't even played for you yet, you're not going to give up on him. Even though Darnold's relatively young, you know, he's been around the block. So you think that, is he in his 30s? No, he's not. He's not on the wrong side of 30. He's still young for a quarterback. I just think when you got a good thing going, you got to keep it. But there's finances involved, and there's the element of the high draft choice in a quarterback who unfortunately got hurt. So I don't think there's a place for Sam Darnold in Minnesota. I certainly believe that there's going to be a few teams that are willing to say, hey, you know what? This guy's young. He showed that with good coaching and decent players around him, he can be a legitimate starting quarterback. And of course, he has the pedigree, you know, being a top three pick in the draft not so long ago. So, I think he's going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL, and I think he's going to get paid, and, deservedly so.
Hey, Minnesota could end up taking a page out of the Falcons book, where they draft Michael Penix, the surprising pick of the draft, and pay Kirk Cousins all that money. Who knows? But it'll be definitely interesting to see there. Moving on, I want to move on to Sam Darnold's first team and the other New York team, where football in New York these days, people in New York aren't liking football as much, you know, with the state of their two teams. But I want to hit on one of my most hated teams, and that's the New York Jets, who are seemingly continuing to be a dumpster fire despite going into the season with some of the highest expectations that they've had in years. A couple weeks ago, I forget what the day it was. It was maybe an episode or two ago. The GM, Joe Douglas, gets fired. I think everybody, I think the three of us all saw this coming at some point when he made all the moves to get Rodgers and Alan Lazard, and then traded for Devontae Adams and drafted Garrett Wilson, Sauce Gardner, all this talent on the team, and the team doesn't produce. The coach already got canned. It's time for the GM to go, and that ended up happening. And since he was fired, it's just been a stream of just, I love it, hilarious news coming out of New York, you know, with Aaron Rodgers and all that. And, you know, I'll start with you, Manish, and we'll go to you, Hogan. Where do you sit on, you know, Joe Douglas getting fired? Where do you see the Jets going? Is there any hope for them?
Is there any hope for them? Oh my God, I feel like Jet fans have been saying that for as long as most of them have been alive. Look, first, a general manager, 30-64. That's a 32% winning percentage over, you know, 5 3/4 seasons. Of general managers who have been in that position for at least 5 seasons, I believe that Joe Douglas has the second worst winning percentage in NFL history behind Matt Millen. So, look, he whipped on the quarterback, you know, 3 different times, letting Sam Darnold walk, drafting Zach Wilson with the second pick, and then going all in for a 39, soon to be 40-year-old quarterback. He whiffed on a left tackle with the 11th overall pick in Mekhi Becton a few years back. You know, defensive line, which was their strength last year, despite a 7-10 season, has taken significant steps backwards because of some offseason decisions that Joe Douglas has made. So, you know, we can go on and on, but, you know, it's obvious that he didn't produce, you know, moving on from him and the head coach after last season probably would have been the smartest choice, but he clearly was not going to be a part of their future. Now, that's what fans care about, right? Follow the Jets. What happens now? So what I thought was very interesting is that Woody Johnson and his brother Christopher Johnson hired the 33rd Team, which is a media company that was founded by Mike Tannenbaum, who was once upon a time Woody Johnson's general manager, and took the Jets really to their high point over the last 20 years, which is 2 consecutive AFC championship games before he ultimately was fired. So the man who was fired by Woody Johnson is now going to consult Woody Johnson and his brother on the next general manager and head coach search. Now, what I will say, and Rick Spielman, a former general manager for the Vikings, is also going to help. What I will say is that Mike Tannenbaum is a brilliant guy. You say what you want about him as a general manager. I thought he did an exceptional job, even though they didn't get over the hump. He is a brilliant guy. He is a collaborator. He is going to be providing the Johnson brothers with data on you know, what makes sense and really guiding them in what direction they should look towards. I don't think he's going to be making the hire. That's going to be a Woody Johnson production, to a lesser degree, his younger brother. But Mike Tannenbaum can provide quality candidates. And, you know, it's unfortunate for Jet fans. I think it's actually more common than people think around the NFL. And Woody Johnson has owned the team for 25 years, and he still does not have really strong relationships inside the NFL community. That's why several years ago he hired a consulting company to hire a general, help Jair hire a general manager. That ended up being John Idzik, who only lasted 2 years before Woody fired him. And now he's enlisting, And then after that, he got Charlie Casserly and Ron Wolf to help in the general manager and head coaching search. That produced Mike Maccagnan and Todd Bowles. And now he's going to try Mike Tannenbaum and see if he can help. You know, the question I would have, if you're being objective about this, is that what top-end candidates, and trust me, there are a lot of top-end general manager candidates out there, who would want to go work for the Jets? Not because they're the Jets. It's easy to pile on the Jets and say, well, they stink. You just have to look a little bit deeper at the internal structure of the organization in terms of who's making the decisions, who has influence in making those decisions. And what, yes, Woody Johnson is the owner, and Christopher Johnson is a minority owner. Those guys rely heavily on 2 people. One person is Ira Axelrod, who is one of the vice presidents or the president of the Johnson Company, which is the private equity firm that the Johnson brothers own. He has been with Woody Johnson from the very beginning. He has sat in on general manager interviews, in an athletic story that came out last week about a pivotal meeting that Woody Johnson had with coaches about Aaron Rodgers and whether he should be benched or not. Ira Axelrod was in that meeting. He is not a New York Jets employee. He's just an employee of the Johnson Company, which is a separate entity. He has a lot of influence. He has no football background. I think that has been problematic for the better part of 2 decades. Jaime Elhai is the team president. He was the team's general counsel, essentially the team lawyer for a very long time before being promoted to team president. He also doesn't have a real football background. He did play football in college, but no real football background. Again, he's a lawyer. He has a lot of influence in the decision-making. So you're talking about the 2 Johnson brothers, a team president with no real football background, and a lawyer who's the president of the private equity firm that the Johnsons own. Those 4 guys have the most influence in that organization. You can easily say that that's non-football people. And I've talked to many people who have worked for the Johnsons and the Jets, And that clutter, in terms of decision-making, has been an impediment. And I think if you got Joe Douglas and, you know, wrapped the truth serum around him and gave him some truth serum, he would say the exact same thing. That doesn't absolve Joe Douglas for the mistakes he's made. He had plenty of time. Woody Johnson was exceedingly patient with him before he stepped in or made some decisions this season. I don't blame Woody for that. But I will say that it's a complicated problem when you have non-football people making, getting in the owner's ear. And I've talked to people who have said, if you're the last person to get into Woody Johnson's ear, you're probably going to get him to agree to whatever thought you have. So I think a football structure that needs to be completely revamped with a football person in charge of operations on that side above the general manager will be the smartest move. That's not going to happen. There's a systemic problem in the organization. So I think Mike Tannenbaum, Rick Spielman are going to do a lot of quality work and help out Woody and Christopher Johnson as much as possible. But ultimately, as long as the internal structure remains the same, and I anticipate that it would, I think you're going to run into the same problems with the new general manager and the new head coach, in 2025 and beyond.
Just a sea of ineptitude, and I'm here for it. I'm here for it. As a Patriots fan, I love seeing the Jets struggle. And, you know, that's some amazing insight into how they do things. It's obviously something that I didn't know. And just hearing that, like, why wouldn't you want to have football people running your football operation? It just, to me, it doesn't make sense. And then, of course, you add in the prima donna quarterback who has to have things his way in Aaron Rodgers. And Hogan, I'm going to go to you on this. There was a report that came out from Diana Rossini this week that Rodgers could be placed on IR, could have played his last game for the Jets, and indicating that there may be, he won't be back next year and that he wants out and wants to keep playing somewhere else. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first and foremost, I just want to say that if the Jets need to hire somebody with ineptitude that will tank their franchise, I'm fully available for them. So, I mean, I am here to just, envelop all their needs when it comes to making them a even more worse franchise than they already are. So sign me up, Woody Johnson. I'm right here for you. I'll even work remote for you. I won't even have to be in the building. Anyway, going to your question about Aaron Rodgers, I do think that he's probably going to return to the Jets next year, because at this point, where else can he go? You know, we alluded to the whole Sam Darnold conversation we had earlier, where essentially Sam Darnold is kind of putting on an exhibition for what he can do right now for Minnesota, and a team that's desperate for a quarterback to lead them next year is going to take a chance and give him, a type, maybe like a Baker Mayfield type deal. Maybe not as much money, but it'll be at a similar aspect where it's like, okay, we see what Sam Darnold can do with the right system, the right people around him. We'll take a chance on that. If you look at the Jets organization right now, aside from Aaron Rodgers, I don't even know who their backup is right now. I know they drafted that kid from Florida State, who I don't think is going to be, even ready by next season because of that ACL tear he had in college last year. Travis Henry, I forget his name. But anyway, the fact is, Aaron Rodgers doesn't have anywhere else to go, and the Jets are almost shoehorned into keeping him as their starter at this point because they don't have anything else, especially with, you look around the roster with what they have, unless they're doing an entire upheaval of the roster with Alan Lazard, like you talked about, Davante Adams, who we alluded to earlier, could be potentially a cut candidate if they, decide to not take that the rest of his deal there. But where they built this team around what Aaron Rodgers wanted it to be and what he needed it to be, according to him, they'd be foolish to cut their ties with him without establishing a succession plan at this point, which they currently don't have. So it's hard for me to sit there and say that Rodgers is going to be on another team at this point. Could he be? Absolutely. It's the NFL, it's sports. Anything is possible at this point, right? But from the high likely standpoint, the Jets are just going to continue to be the Jets. And I can't see a quarterback being anybody else besides Aaron Rodgers next year if he's not going to retire at this point.
But yeah, they do have Tyrod Taylor under contract for 2025, but he also has his, problems staying healthy. So I don't think he's a guy you can rely on. I hate to circle this back to Sam Darnold, but on paper, if you didn't know the backgrounds of the player and the team, Sam Darnold would actually be a great choice for the Jets. But I have a hard time believing that Sam Darnold would want to play for the New York Jets again.
He's seen too many ghosts. He's not going back there.
The funny thing about the Jets in this is I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast, but the meme has been floating around from The Office with Michael Scott and his boss, basically Michael Scott looking like a total doofus. And you got highest expectations in 24 years or 25 years with the Jets name right next to it. And then you have the lowest expectation with the Patriots in 25 years. And they got the same record or within a game of each other, the same record. It's so funny. It's like every time I get upset about being a Patriots fan, I just remember they are not the Jets and will never be the Jets. They will never be the Jets. So real quick, Manish, if Aaron Rodgers does end up leaving, do you see any kind of potential landing spot for Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, you know what? He wouldn't have to move. He could live in Jersey and play for the New York Giants to bring it all the way back to the Daniel Jones and the Giants. They're in the market for a quarterback. Who knows if John Mara is going to move on from their general manager, Joe Shane, and Brian Daboll, their head coach. If they do, I think there's a highly qualified head coach that Patriot fans might be familiar with who has a great relationship with the Mara family and the Giants organization who could be interested in the Giants job. And I know that particular head coach, Bill Belichick, has a really good relationship with Aaron Rodgers. So I don't think it's fanciful to say that Aaron Rodgers could be playing at MetLife Stadium for the other team, the New York Giants, under Bill Belichick in 2025.
That would be Hogan's worst nightmare.
I would quit football so fast if that happened. I would be the most angry person on the planet because I hate the Giants. I hate Rodgers. And if Belichick went there, that would just be like the ultimate stab in the heart for me.
Yeah, if you remember when he did his football life back, I don't know, 15 years ago.
And yeah, I remember.
Him talking about the Giants. Like he still...
He cried.
Fondly remembers.
He cried. He broke down in the hallway looking back at all the memories of him with Parcells and being the defensive coordinator. Yeah. And honestly, I wouldn't – if 07 and 2011 didn't happen, go to the Giants. Have at it. But the fact that those 2 years happened, fuck the Giants. I'm going to say it. I don't care. I don't want
I'm not
happen.
Even going
to
go that far.
I will.
If 07 didn't happen. If they beat him in 11, whatever. It's 1 year. Right. 07 was the – pinnacle kick to the nuts as a Patriots fan.
I think that Shad Khan, who's the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, will give Bill Belichick everything he wants, and that means total control of the franchise. They have a quarterback in Trevor Lawrence already, who they just paid. So if I were a betting man, I would say that the Jaguars would offer the most money and most control to Bill Belichick. I think that the Cowboys will offer the head coaching position to Bill Belichick, but when you're the Cowboys coach, you've got to deal with Jerry Jones, who does have a good relationship with Bill Belichick, but there's always the shadow of Jerry Jones that you have to contend with. I don't know if Belichick will be interested in that. And then there's the Giants. I really do think Jacksonville, Cowboys, and if there is an opening with the Giants, I think Brian Daboll is actually a great coach, so I wouldn't fire him. But if John Mara decides to move on from the head coach and there is an opening, I think that the Jags, the Cowboys, and the Giants would be on the top of Bill Belichick's list. But ultimately, if Bill Belichick, I think at this point, we're talking about the end of November, if Bill Belichick wants the Jaguars job, I'm pretty sure he can get it.
I'll say this. I think that, you know, Bill Belichick would end up taking less money. I don't know if he'd cede the control, but I think he would take less money and deal with having to find a quarterback again to coach where he started his career.
Yeah, maybe. Absolutely. I mean, I can see it.
I can't see him going to Dallas. I can't see him going to Dallas because the fact that Jerry Jones is ready to fire radio hosts for disagreeing with him. There's no way that you can sit there and tell me Belichick's going to deal with Robert Kraft, you know, times 3, 4, whatever the hell Jerry Jones is at this point. So I entertained the idea of it earlier this year when he wasn't hired as a coach with Dallas just because Mike McCarthy is just, you know, not doing what he needs to do there. Again, this year is kind of a fluke, I would say, with all the injuries and everything they've had at this point with Dak and all that. But with Jerry Jones being the way that he is, I can't see Belichick wanting to deal with somebody that's power hungry, especially where we go back to the whole Atlanta thing, where that was the question mark being, could Belichick, you know, agree to not be a GM with that whole situation, even though that wasn't per quota the situation, according to, what was it, Arthur Blank down there. So I don't know. I see Giants or Jacksonville for sure, but it would be interesting to see where Belichick actually ends up.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Bill's former team, the garbage Patriots. Yes, I'm going to go that far right now. I'm so disgusted with what I saw on Sunday from the Patriots. They traveled down to Miami, which has always been a house of horrors for the Patriots. Going back 25 years, they've always seemed to never show up and play down there. They had the excuse in the past because they were actually a good team, and it was the time they would go and lay their egg for the season. This Patriots team does not have that same luxury because they suck. They go down there. They lose 34-15. Tua's continued his undefeated streak against the Patriots, which kills me because it just – our good friend Puma, who's been on this podcast before, and Manish, he was on one of our live shows. You know who I'm talking about. Big Dolphins fan. Gets on my case. But Hogan, how did you feel about this performance? Are you as disgusted as I am? Because I'm ready to start questioning some things with the direction of this team.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to talk about like internet memes and all that stuff, you know that funny one where it's like Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec where he takes his computer and throws it in the dumpster outside? That was essentially me with my TV this past Sunday because I just didn't want to watch that hot dog shit that was rolling across the screen any longer than it was. But this Patriots team is so incredibly frustrating because at the end of the day, the expectations, like you talked about, are the lowest they've been in 20 plus years. I mean, I, of all people, went into the season projecting them that their ceiling of wins was 2 or 3, which they're currently at. I mean, they've kind of shocked me already to this point that they've won that many games. But the fact is, I'm going back to the organization, the coaching, and it's ironic that we're dumping all over the Jets for how, you know, disorganized they are as an organization. I'm not going to go and say that the Patriots are as inept as them, but that branch is starting to lean lower to where the Jets are because they continue to prove that they cannot adapt, they cannot evolve, and that they refuse to look at what's happening within this team and this organization and make anything better, be successful. And it starts from the top. It starts with Robert Kraft, who has this idea that you can just plug and play anybody into specific situations and just everything will be hunky-dory. And it's going back to that quote. I say it all the time, and it always rings true from The Dark Knight, where it's like you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening with Robert Kraft at this point, where he was beloved because he had Tom Brady. He had Bill Belichick. He had Super Bowl wins. He had continuous playoff runs. You're not seeing that anymore. And it starts from Robert Kraft, where he is the penny pincher that doesn't want to pay players, that is just, you know, let's get rid of the most experienced and decorated head coach of all time and replace him with somebody who has no head coaching experience. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about this, but when it comes to Gerard Mayo, I appreciated him as a player, and I do appreciate him as a coach because I think he did a fantastic job with this defense the last, 4 or 5 years that he's been with the organization, where he was de facto the defensive coordinator without the title. I mean, he split that with Steve Belichick, but at the same time, everybody who had a brain and could watch the games saw Mayo coaching from the sideline and actually talking to the players and calling the plays, observing what's happening on the field, making adjustments. And the defense was the bright spot of this team the last few years when they had any type of success. So the fact that they are so inept this year on that side of the ball specifically is what's driving me absolutely batshit crazy. Because while I projected them to not win that many games this year, they had no excuse to be letting up 34 points, you know, 40 points, whatever it is. They've let up massive scores this year. The Houston Texans walked into Foxborough and pretty much wiped their butt with this Patriots roster. There's no other way to put it. That was earlier in the season, and now we're at Thanksgiving, and we're going to Miami, and we're dropping 34 points, or we're getting 34 points dropped on us. So I will just wrap this up by saying that I am one of those people that wants to give a long leash to inexperienced or younger coaches or guys that, you know, are in their first year or whatever. But at this point, that leash needs to be reined in because I'm getting more and more frustrated where I don't see adjustments being made and I don't see anything improving across the board with this team. So Mayo better figure his shit out quickly, or I'm going to be the first one to say, hey, let's go find a new coach next year.
And, you know, real quick before we go to Manish's thoughts, I want to know, you know, with him, if he agrees with the two of us on this. But you know, for me, I've always been in the camp that you don't fire a coach after 1 year. Don't be the Raiders. Don't be the team that pulls the plug too early on a coach before he's able to really establish what he's trying to instill, the culture, et cetera, into the organization. I have moved. This game kind of was a tipping point for me watching it because I still don't see Gerard Mayo doing any real coaching on the sideline. And obviously I'm not there. I'm not watching him the entire game, but every time they show him on the TV, he's just sitting there kind of, he kind of almost has, I don't want to say he looks clueless because that's probably unfair for me to assume at this distance, but it always is either upset or he's yelling at the refs or he just doesn't look like he's doing anything. And, you know, the defense to me this year is obviously one of the biggest disappointments. Like they were a fantastic unit last year, kept them in all the games that they ended up losing. It was always the offense. And this year, it seems that they've taken a massive step back, returning just about every player. And I know Christian Barmore is just getting back into it. And they haven't had Juwan Bentley for most of the season because he's been hurt. Hogan, you know I love me some Kyle Duggar. I'm out. I have switched to your team on this.
Oh,
watching him play this game multiple times in absolute no man's land in defense, giving up some of these touchdowns. No man's land. Doesn't even look like he knows what the hell he's doing out there. Just guys like that, if they were going to continue to be what they were, need to play at the level they were playing at last year. And they're just not. Whether that's just the talent, is the lack of talent is showing up, or DeMarcus Covington, the coordinator who they instilled, who was a very, you know, highly potential coach this year, I think he's failing at his job. And, you know, I sit here and I talk about wanting to fire the coordinators and the coach and everything. I'm, you know, a big, you know, critic of Alex Van Pelt and the lack of creativity that the offense has shown. DeMarcus Covington has got to be the first one to go. He has taken, this is basically the same defense that they had last year. And they have gotten not just, they haven't like regressed. They've regressed very far. Like this is not even close to the same unit that we saw last year. And it has to do with, you know, the leadership there. So I'm like you, I'm really like at the point where I haven't seen enough to make me feel optimistic that Mayo can improve next year. Like usually you see these kind of positions and points of time in the season where you're like, okay, he's a rookie head coach. There's going to be mistakes. There's going to be issues. You see enough to have that potential going forward. I see nothing. I see nothing with Mayo right now. And to me, that scares the crap out of me because you have such a highly talented young quarterback. And I don't want to see them screw him up in any way. He's shown so much potential, even in this game where he had all these turnovers and, you know, at times he looked like a rookie, still making plays, that touchdown to Hooper, like on the run, throwing it, finding him wide open down the field on the sideline, like on 4th and 15 of all plays, was unbelievable. It's like, I need to see, if I see one of those plays a game, I'm like, all right, Drake May's continuing in the right direction, knowing that he's going to have the turnovers. Peyton Manning threw, I think, 28 interceptions his rookie season. It's going to happen. He's going to learn. So, Manish, are we on point with this? Are we on point with our pitching on this?
Really quickly, I just want to be so excited that you finally agree with me about Kyle Duggar, because I have been beating that drum for so long, and I have text receipts from you, Mr. Burgess, about, oh, hey. Your boy Duggar.
I'm a man. I own my mistakes.
That's right.
I owned it.
All right, Manish, give us your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, you guys hit the nail on the head on the defense. It's actually similar to the Ravens defense. I mean, the Ravens are winning games, so maybe it doesn't get talked about as much, but Mike McDonald's defense from a year ago is they've lost players, but you know, the core of that defense is the same, and their new defense coordinator, Zach Gore, has had a lot of trouble. So even though the Ravens are, you know, if you know, not the best team in the AFC, certainly among the top two or three, their defense has been suspect. It's not the defense that you're used to. So pointing to the defensive coordinator in that instance, just like you guys are pointing to the defensive coordinator with the Patriots, I think is warranted. There's really not that much of an excuse. I don't know if it's scheme. I don't know if it's preparation, in-game adjustments, but something clearly is amiss from a year ago. And it shouldn't be, because largely the personnel is back, you know, in spite of some of those injuries that you said earlier, Burge. But in terms of Mayo, I am with you, LaBerge, I don't subscribe to the idea of firing a guy after 1 year because then you become a radioactive organization, much like the Browns were for a while back. It's too reactionary. Now, if there's something that is simply not connecting between the players and the coach, that's a different issue. But Robert Kraft groomed Gerard Mayo for years before handing the torch to him. So the idea that he would just cut bait after 1 year just seems far-fetched to me. I'm not saying it's definitively not going to happen because a lot can happen during the course of a season. But clearly there's a connection between Mayo and Kraft, and Kraft believes him enough that I think that he see this season through and give him at least another opportunity in 2025. If he didn't, then that would essentially be Kraft admitting that he made a massive mistake by parting ways with arguably the best head coach in NFL history for a guy who could only replace him for one season. And that's not a mistake, I don't think, that Robert Kraft would be willing to admit. But again, I think that he trusts Mayo, and he certainly may not agree with every decision he's made this season. Probably doesn't, like most fans. But I think he'd be willing to give him at least another season. Because again, you're firing Bill Belichick for your handpicked successor, and that guy only lasts a year. That reflects poorly on you. And I just don't think the Krafts are willing to do that right now.
It'll be very, very interesting to see, you know, what Robert Kraft does. I mean, it'll be nice to see Gerard Mayo if they put some talent on the field. I mean, yeah. The penalties in this game, without going on another diatribe that I just went on, were inexcusable from the offensive line, specifically Viridian Lowe with the false starts. And it seemed like it never ended. But we'll see where the Patriots go on Sunday. They're playing the Colts. You know, on paper, you could argue it's a winnable game, but again, I watch the Patriots now to see Drake May's ascension. So before we continue on to the next topic, let's go ahead and get in our ad break for our sponsors. Again, presented by Fans First Sports Network. So let's hear from them. We'll be back in a bit. All right, and we're back with Between the Tackles. Manish, we're at three quarters of the way through the NFL season of 2024. Hard to believe it's flown by.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I, for one, obviously am ready for the season to end. I'm ready for good playoff football, watching the Bills lose, hopefully. But, you know, we'll see where that goes. But let's talk about some awards, all right? We've seen three quarters of the season now. The league leaders for, you know, most valuable player, offensive rookie of the year, coach of the year, starting to take shape. So starting with the most valuable player, where do you sit on that?
Yeah, you know, it's a de facto quarterback award. Because you could have easily given it to Christian McCaffrey last year, the year before, whatever it was. And I think this year there is a legitimate case to be made for Saquon Barkley to be MVP. Certainly he's the most valuable player on that team. You know, Jalen Hurts has been serviceable. But that team goes through Saquon Barkley. And anyone who's watched the Eagles, as I have, the entire season knows that they're only as good as Saquon is, to be honest with you. This guy is playing the best football of his life. He's playing better than he did as a rookie with the Giants, and he had an exceptional year in his first year in the NFL. He's healthy. He's playing behind a talented team, a talented offensive line, nothing like he's seen, frankly, in the NFL, you know, being with the Giants for as long as he was. I think a legitimate case can be made. Do I think he's going to win? No. I think he's a shoe-in for Offensive Player of the Year. But I ultimately think that it's going to go to a quarterback. And if you look at Lamar Jackson's numbers, I thought a great measuring stick game was the other night against the Chargers because I'm a believer in Justin Herbert. I thought that he was in the MVP race. I still do, despite losing to the Ravens. But Lamar Jackson is playing the best football of his life, and that includes – the two previous MVP seasons he had. It's really weird to me because I was not a Lamar believer, and I still have my reservations just because of his shortcomings in the postseason. But you just can't argue with the way he's playing in Todd Monken's systems this year. He is lights out. Statistically, it's unbelievable what he's done. Clearly, you know, they're one of the top, as I said earlier, top few teams in the AFC, a legit contender to beat the Chiefs in the postseason if they should meet along with the Bills. I think it's going to be Lamar. A few weeks ago, I thought Jared Goff. I want to keep Goff in the mix, but they have so much firepower on the Lions. I'm not sure that, they almost kind of cancel each other out. you know, whether it's Gibbs or Amon-Ra St. Brown, David Montgomery, all those guys contribute week to week. I think, again, Herbert still has an opportunity. Let's see what happens in the month and a half, but he's more of a longer shot. I don't really think there's anybody else other than Josh Allen. Josh Allen would be the other guy that could be in the mix. They're playing the Ravens. If they beat the Ravens and Josh Allen plays well, he could perhaps supplant Lamar Jackson. But ultimately, I think it's going to be Lamar or Josh Allen with an outside chance of it being Justin Herbert or Jared Goff. I do think that Saquon deserves it. If I'm picking right now, which I am, I'm going to say it's going to be Lamar Jackson. It's going to be nip and tuck with Lamar and Josh Allen, but I'll say Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, I'll echo every sentiment that you just said. I am a big proponent of a non-quarterback winning the most valuable player. Last year, I was all on the Christian McCaffrey hype train. It should have been his award last year, hands down. And, you know, it wasn't, because like you said, it's a de facto quarterback award. I mean, they should just change the name of it at this point, because it is what it is. And, you know, the names that you threw out there, Lamar, Josh Allen, Jared Goff, I agree with you 100% on Jared Goff and the Lions. They're just such a wagon that he's not like wowing everybody with his statistics. So like you said, they kind of cancel each other out. I will never pick Josh Allen to win MVP or a Buffalo Bill to win MVP. Although a couple weeks ago, I was all aboard circling the wagons for them to beat Kansas City. So I was very happy about that. But yeah, Lamar Jackson's numbers are unbelievable. You know, it's kind of shocking that they don't have a better record, you know, given how well he's played. You know, they're in such a battle and a dogfight with the Steelers in the AFC North. So that'll be interesting to see coming down the stretch, but I'm with you. I think if I'm picking right now, I'm not even going to say Josh Allen's name in that. I'm going to say it's Lamar's award to lose. But if I was picking, it's Saquon Barkley. I want a running back to win. I don't think it's happened since Adrian Peterson was the last one.
Yeah, Peterson, and maybe before that, maybe Marshall Faulk. I mean, it's too far between.
It's kind of wild to think about that. So that's interesting. That'll be interesting to see coming down the stretch, to see you know, where we're at on that. Let's move on to Coach of the Year. I want to hear your Coach of the Year. I mean, I was just looking at it, and I'm like, I'm having a hard time seeing who could win it, but I think we might be on the same page with where this one's going to go to.
Well, my vote would be, and I hope he gets it because he's well-deserving and he's an exceptional coach. I covered him when he was a player, but that notwithstanding, just from a coaching standpoint, Kevin O'Connell has done an unbelievable job. They're 9-2, the Vikings are. They lost their first-round quarterback before the season. They went to Sam Darnold. People thought, well, Sam Darnold, what can he do? You know, maybe if they're lucky, they can win six, seven games, you know, maybe eight if a miracle happens. Now they're sitting atop their division, the hardest division, by the way, in football, at 9-2. I'm going with Kevin O'Connell. That being said, there are two, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention two other guys who in any other year I think would win. Jim Harbaugh, unbelievable. I thought it was going to happen. I saw it happening when the Chargers hired him. I knew he'd bring out the best in Justin Herbert. He's bringing out the best in Justin Herbert, maybe not statistically, but clearly in his level of play, the mentality, the culture he is setting in Los Angeles with the Chargers, really in great position to make the postseason. Jim Harbaugh, national champion, took the Niners to a Super Bowl, just an incredible head football coach. I think that the Chargers hit a home run with that hire. I honestly can't believe that Jim Harbaugh lasted a decade in Michigan, didn't come out sooner, because he really did the NFL a disservice by not being in the NFL for that decade. I know he went back to the alma mater, won the national title, all great. But this guy is an unbelievable head coach. Say what you want, a little quirky, kind of funny to me. But I think that he deserves recognition. In any other year, he would win. The other guy who's been around a very, very long time, I think either he's the longest tenured head coach or second longest tenured head coach, along with John Harbaugh, is Mike Tomlin. 8-3 with Justin Fields as their quarterback and a supposedly washed up Russell Wilson. Nobody thought that they would be atop what traditionally is the hardest division in football in the AFC North. He's in the mix as well. I think all three of those guys, Tomlin, Jim Harbaugh, Kevin O'Connell, all worthy, but you only give the award to one person. And I'll say Kevin O'Connell. I do want to mention one thing. He's not going to win the award, but there's an outside chance. It doesn't look like it if you look it on paper. But if somehow the Dolphins run the table. Mike McDaniel, who has been lampooned for the first 2 months of the season, they're 5-6, didn't have Tua, really a rudderless ship without Tua. Now they're kind of finding their groove. If for whatever reason they're 5-6 and they run the table, finish at 11-6, I think frankly he should be in consideration for coach of the year. But a lot of work to be done. Again, he's on the outside looking in. Tomlin, Harbaugh, O'Connell, to me, are the clear front runners for the award.
You know, I'll agree with you. I was, you know, Kevin O'Connell, Sam Darnold, given the situation, they lose Kirk Cousins in free agency.
Yeah.
JJ McCarthy blows out his knee and he's doing it with a guy who's been a backup and was considered a draft bust in New York. And, you know, they look as good as any team in the NFC, which is unbelievable considering where the, you know, the Detroit Lions are sitting at the top of that division and the Vikings are just nipping right at their butts and not giving in to the, you know, Detroit's run of dominance there. You know, I'll second everything. I don't want to repeat what you said about Jim Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin, because I agree with everything you said. Another guy I wanted to throw into it, probably won't win it, seasoned NFL coach. And, you know, his team is performing better than I think I expected them to. And that's Sean Payton in Denver. With what he's done with Bo Nix.
Yeah, that's a great one.
You know, if they continue to do well and they make the playoffs, I mean, you got to throw his name into the, you know, contention for that award, because, I mean, I wrote them off. Bo Nix, I was like, who the heck's this guy? He's not, why are they taking him so high? Like, he's not going to be anything. And, you know, we'll get into him in the next topic here. But, like, it's hard for me not to put that in there when they're sitting at 7-5. They gave Kansas City everything they had. It took a blocked field goal for them to not beat the defending champions. So definitely going to be interesting to see where it goes. You know, I love what Minnesota's doing with Kevin O'Connell, and they seem like they've always been in it. There was a couple years ago where they started off the season so hot and they kind of fell off at the end. So that was when Justin Jefferson had that insane grab on fourth down in Buffalo. And I was sitting there screaming at the TV, let's go, you know? But yeah, let's see. We'll see. It'd be interesting to see where that award goes, but I think we're in the same mindset. It's kind of starting to take shape there. Final one I want to get to, offensive rookie of the year. This is going to be a little bit of a contested one. You know why, but who you got?
Well, I know who you got. I am going with Bo Nix for all the reasons you just outlined. You just made my case for me. Everything you just said, you hit the nail on the head. The guy's got 16 touchdown passes. Half of them are in the last 3 weeks. He's clearly getting better. I mean, you look at the last month of the season. This guy is so much better than he was when the season began. I'm with you. When the Broncos took him, I thought that might have been a reach. I didn't think that he'd necessarily be a difference maker at the NFL level. And clearly he has become a difference maker. Look, they're 7-5. As you said, they're a blocked field goal away from being 8-4 after and beating the Chiefs. They're trending in the right direction. For all the reasons you said that Sean Payton should be head coach of the year, I think Bo Nix should be rookie of the year. They've been a great team, a great tandem. I think that speaks to Sean Payton's greatness as a head coach, generally speaking. But it also speaks to the quality of player that Bo Nix is. Easy guy to write off. You and I just kind of said that we wrote him off before he even started playing, but he is clearly proving us wrong. And I think there's a lot of momentum for the guy that you're going to talk about early in the season, and rightfully so. But, you know, like they say, the old cliche, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And I think that Bo Nix is in for a great finish to the season. And I think that's why he's going to, I think it's why he's going to steal the award, frankly.
I'm going to preface it by saying that I think Bo Nix will win the award, but I think that a guy named Drake May, I'm going to shoot my bias out here. If we start seeing continued, maybe those turnovers get cleaned up in the last 4 weeks coming in, and some of the plays that he's been making with, you know, he doesn't have a Terry McLaurin, you know, to throw to. I mean, I'm not going to make the case for Bo Nix because he doesn't have those kind of guys. He's got Cortland Sutton. That's about it. But Drake May doesn't even have that. And he's, you know, he's making some of these plays here in New England. And yeah, you can call me biased. It probably is bias that's coming out. But he's the only rookie quarterback that I have watched every like moment up that he's played. And obviously a guy like Jaden Daniels, that's who I think you thought where I was going,
did have a
strong start. But like you said, I think they've lost the last three in a row. I think now it's something like that, or even maybe even more than that. But they started off so hot and I was like all aboard the Commanders hype train. And they've been put in their place lately. You know, that Dallas Cowboys game though was not Jaden Daniels' fault. That was such a That was such a wild ending to that game. But, you know, if he turns it around in the last month of the season, you're going to be hearing his name talked about up there quite a bit again. But, you know, I'm going to be biased and stick my neck out and say Drake May is going to continue to develop and maybe clean up some of those turnovers and continue to make some of these plays that will at least have him in the top of the conversation. Ultimately, Bo Nix is a guy who, you know, he's not turning the ball over a lot, and he's looked like a true NFL quarterback with the help of a very seasoned head coach in Sean Payton. And, you know, seeing where the team is there, the way they've been playing, even as late, they haven't fallen off like the Commanders have. It's hard to argue with Bo Nix, who's played the whole season and has played at such a good level. So we'll see where these awards end up falling. You know, I'm sure we'll revisit them after the season before, you know, the awards are announced to see where we're at on that. But let's move on to the funnest segment that we have. And that is the championship race between the tackles for our picks of the week. And, you know, Hogan had to dip out a little early today, so he's not here to, you know, take the wrath of being trash last week. Not like I can talk because I was trash too. You know, Manish sends us his picks of games. We picked pretty much all of them, and we picked the wrong ones. The two that he picked that we didn't pick, he got right. So just to quickly recap, last week I was 1-2. You know, I ended up losing the Dolphins, the Steelers. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong week here. I ended up losing badly. It just wasn't good. I don't have my picks in front of me, but you were correct. You were correct. All but the Eagles Rams game. That was the one you and I picked against each other on. You know, my Vikings lost and my Chargers lost, and you know, you were 2-1, and the only one you got was wrong was the one that we picked against each other on, which is kind of wild. Let's move on. I just want to start talking about these picks. So, Manish, you go first. Who do you got?
All right. Yeah, as everyone knows, you have to take one underdog. So my underdog is going to be the Titans getting 5.5 at the Commanders. Bird, you eloquently recounted that the Commanders have lost 3 in a row, so they're trending down. Brian Callahan said that the Titans, despite being 3-8, are not, quote-unquote, not dead yet. So I think they are dead for the playoffs, but I do think that Will Levis has shown some promising things, with the exception of his pick six problem. If he can just cut down the pick sixes, I think this guy can be a quality player. Getting 5.5, I know it's a road, you know, they're road to underdogs, but I like the 5.5. I think they can keep it tight. Don't know if they can win it, but I certainly would happily take the 5.5. Then I'm going with my Lions, you know, given 9.5, on Thanksgiving. It's a home game, obviously, as everyone knows. What people don't know is that the Lions have lost, I think, their last 10 Thanksgiving games, which until I looked it up, I wasn't aware of that. But so that doesn't bode well for me. The Bears typically play well on Thanksgiving. I think the Lions actually in their history are under 500 on Thanksgiving, but this is a different Lions team. It's a different feel, a short week. Caleb Williams has been playing, you know, pretty well. You know, they're playing the Bears. But short week against the juggernaut team, Thanksgiving, I can see this being another 30-10 type of win. It's kind of par for the course for this Lions team. You know, giving up 9.5 points is a lot, but I am so on board the Lions train. I think this is going to be a non-competitive game when the fourth quarter rolls around. So I'll take the Lions as a heavy favorite, and then I will go with my Vikings. We've talked about the Vikings a lot. Sam Darnold, Kevin O'Connell. They're on the they're hosting. They're 3.5-point favorites against the Cardinals. Cardinals, you know, we're heating up a little bit, but they've kind of cooled off. And I know that the Vikings played a tough game in Chicago that went to overtime. They almost squandered that. But I got faith in Sam Darnold, Justin Jefferson, Kevin O'Connell. The home game, I'll gladly give up the 3.5 to Arizona. I think this is another game, frankly, that could be a double-digit win for Minnesota.
Love it. I love that you're aboard the Lions hype train, because I was on it. We were on it last year, baby. Last year, we were all aboard it, and I'm continuing the steamroll on that train because my team sucks. So I'll go on. I'm going to give you Hogan's picks real quick here before I get into mine. Hogan's got the Cowboys -3.5 versus the Giants. That seems like a like a I don't want to. I mean, I'll jinx him. It seems like an easy win for him given the state of the Giants right now. Went out on a limb taking the Cleveland Browns as underdogs, 5.5 points in Mile High against the Broncos. I don't know about that one, Hogan. We just got done praising Sean Payton and Bo Nix and the Broncos. I don't know about that one. And then took the Kansas City Chiefs with the big number of -12.5 versus the Raiders. The Raiders just lost Gardner Minshew, so I'm sure he's feeling pretty confident about that, despite how the Chiefs have looked over the last 3 weeks or so. So those are Hogan's picks. Now for mine, this is the ones you all want to listen to anyways. First one I'm going with, I'm going to give off. I picked two underdogs this week. The first one I picked is the Dolphins +3.5 at Lambeau against the Packers. You know, you just got done talking about Mike McDaniel and what that team has done since Tua has come back. They looked like a well-oiled machine against the lousy Patriots last week. I like them to continue that. So, yeah, give me the Dolphins plus the points in Lambeau. Second underdog I'm taking, and I was surprised they were an underdog, but that's the Steelers. They're +3 at Cincinnati. You know, I've been a huge critic of what the Steelers have done this year, and they've made me eat crow the whole time. So now I'm picking them. Now would be the time that they're going to end up biting me in the rear end, but we'll see. I'm confident in this one. You know, Cincinnati, you know, they put together some minor stretches this year, but they still really haven't put it together, you know, from where I expected them to be. I had them winning that division this year. So, but yeah, give me the Steelers plus the points. And then the final one, another team that we've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast. I love shitting on them, and that's the Jets. I'm taking the Seahawks minus the points against the Jets. The Jets with the whole news about Aaron Rodgers, the firing of the coach, the GM, the just clear dysfunction. They ain't going to put it together. So give me the Seahawks minus the 2 points there as well. So there you have it. Those are our picks for this week. We'll see if Hogan and I have an opportunity to catch Manish. We gave him another game lead on us by screwing up last week. So I think you sit now a game and a half technically because of your draw ahead of us.
Yeah, that's right.
We would have all been tied last week if you hadn't had that draw. So now you get the leg up again. So we'll see where it goes. I love how close it's been though. That's been good. Yeah. That's been really good.
A lot
good.
Of football left. There's a lot of football left. I'm not getting cocky. I could collapse like the Eagles did last year. You never know.
We're still hoping for that 9-0 week. So we still got to nail that. But yeah, I mean, that about sums up this week's episode of Between the Tackles. Manish, you got anything you want to touch on before we plug this sucker up?
No, I hope everyone has a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy the football, Black Friday football. Like you said earlier, I mean, maybe it's a little bit too much, but I'm sure I'll be watching it.
I'd rather be watching it that's fighting traffic and standing in line going shopping to try to get a deal on a TV or something like that. I'd much rather be watching my TV in the comfort of my own home watching football on Black Friday. So there you have it. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Enjoy the football. Enjoy the family time. Enjoy all of it. And we'll catch you next week. Have a good week. Peace.